Well, thank you all for having me this evening. And I was speaking with Regina through email, and she invited me to keep teaching here. And so I'll keep showing up as long as you all keep showing up. And so if there's support and if there's enthusiasm and interest, if I'm worthy of your time, then I'm happy to keep teaching. And so again, I will tell you, I feel deeply honored to be here and to be able to share in this way. I thought we might start with a prayer. You know, I saw just recently on the news, I normally don't watch the news so much, but just about a half hour ago, I tuned into the news, and my partner, she was telling me that there's this big hurricane and flooding going on in South Texas and perhaps Louisiana and in that area. And so I thought we might just open our hearts to God's grace and just envision a sense of love, a sense of support just flowing to Texas and to all the people who are suffering there. We ask that the rain stop, that each and every person is taken care of, especially the little children and the elderly and those who are disabled and can't fend for themselves. We ask that God's light is with them, that God takes good care of them. And for the souls who have been injured or who have been journeyed to the other side, we invite God's highest love and angel connect with their hearts and to lead them forward toward the light. Toward the light. This is our ongoing prayer. And so throughout the evening and throughout the next couple days and week, I encourage you all just to send some love to those who are suffering, whether it be Texas or individuals suffering throughout India and throughout Africa, and throughout the world. There are so many people, so many individuals who are in great stress, great suffering. And so our heart is open to them. We send them light, we send them love. And as always, the invitation here is to keep your heart open. Open to God's grace, open to your true nature. And so as we move into satsang, I want to start just with this basic inquiry that I had many, many years ago when I first started the path. This investigation of what is suffering? What is suffering? What biases do I have about suffering, about pain? What is the purpose of suffering? And so I encourage you to all sit with these questions. What is the purpose of suffering? What is suffering? Do I have to suffer? Is there a way out of suffering? Is it possible to live without suffering? And so these are great questions. And it's not like if we sit back and just investigate them here for the next 50 minutes, that we're going to come to some total conclusion about suffering. It's an ongoing conversation, an ongoing investigation. Now, if you look at what the Buddha taught in the Four Noble Truths, it was one of his first teachings, was that life is suffering. When I first heard that, I thought, how grim that is. What an incredibly grim teaching to say that life is suffering. Conclusion, it didn't make sense to me. Didn't actually compute. Now, of course, I think the way I understood what the Buddha was trying to say at that moment and what he was actually saying and actually conveying were two different things. And so it's always wise, if we're going to deeply investigate, deeply contemplate something, it's always wise to do it from a place of absolute humility. One of the shortcomings of our mind is that it's quick to assume, quick to think it knows, quick to make a judgment. And so I invite you this evening and always to step back into this spacious space, this spacious humility, and to let go of judgment, let go of assumptions. Give yourself permission to not know. No, as a young, 19-year-old, or I guess I could even imagine me being about 14 years old, just reading the Buddha's teaching that life is suffering. And the first time I read that, if I can imagine back to when I was 14 years old, I think there was just a sense within me of the coldness, of the dryness of what I just read. Because I wasn't truly connected with my heart, I wasn't connected with the heart of the Buddha, I wasn't connected. And I just heard that teaching, that life is suffering. It didn't make any sense, and I almost just quickly dismissed it. I forgot about it, moved on to the rest of the Four Noble Truths, which are essentially there's a way out of suffering if you follow the path. If you follow the Dharma, there's a way out of suffering. And I want to be crystal clear here about suffering. Again, if you turn on the news, if any of us awake to look around at the world, is it possible to end suffering? And then I'll be the teacher that says, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Now, is there a way to greatly reduce suffering, especially psychological suffering, and the suffering associated with identifying with ego versus identifying with our true self or true nature? And yes, there's a way to greatly reduce suffering. Absolutely. Absolutely. But will suffering completely end within us? Probably not. Probably not. And so I encourage you to deeply look at this question, to join me in this investigation. If you feel into your humanity, if you notice, what is it like to connect to a human form? As long as there's war, as long as there's floods, as long as your heart is open and you love your partner or your children or your family or your friends or your teacher or whatever it is, yes, you're going to experience some degree of psychological suffering. Some. Some degree of suffering. So we should start. We can start. We could start. Just with a very clear and mature, a spiritually mature acceptance. As the Buddha has. Yes, that life is suffering. And that the teachings, the Dharma, is basically an investigation of how can we lessen that. And not just for ourselves, but for everyone. Everyone and everything. So many of us, we walk the spiritual path and it's all about us. It's all about our ego. It's all about ending suffering for ourselves first and foremost. But that is contrary to the law of oneness. If you're one with all of life, of course you will want less suffering for everyone, not just your ego. Not just your ego. And so, you know, I can humbly admit, you know, when I started the path, it was all about me. I wanted everyone around me to be quiet when I meditated. I can remember I was sitting upstairs, you know, in this little house that I was living in with my 10 roommates when I was in college. And there was a dog, the neighbor's dog, that was barking. And inwardly, I was trying to discover this peace and simultaneously cursing the dog, becoming more and more angry at this poor dog. And after my meditation practice, I went downstairs and I just wanted to go outside and just yell at that dog. No, I didn't. It wasn't my dog. But it showed this great immaturity within me. I was wanting the dog to be quiet so I could find peace. But I was looking for the type of peace, the kind of peace that's found when things are quiet. But if you look at this world, it can be very loud, it can be obnoxious, it can be violent, it can be brutal. That's the truth. That's truth. And so we can stop at that conclusion and say, okay, the world is the way it is. And then have this inner fight with the world. And I tried that path for many years as well. To fight with life, to try to control it through a meditation practice, through trying to control my mind or whatever it was. And again, many beginner meditators make this mistake. Now, of course, there's a radically different way of operating where you meditate upon the peace which is always present, which is always here, the peace and the silence out of which everything arises, out of which the sound of my voice arises, out of which this hurricane arises, out of which a gunshot arises, out of which the traffic outside arises. Can we place our attention there? And notice what is here all the time. Can you notice right now there's a space in which all of your thoughts arise? A space. place separate from you? Or is that space, is this peace, the most consistent thing about you, despite your noisy mind, despite the coming and going of thought? Is that space? Consistent thing about you. Is that space awake? Is it aware? Is it aware? Is it vibrant? Is it alive? When you step into this self, awake, vibrant, radiant awareness, and your psychological pain will decrease anywhere from 50% to 95%. And so the deeper you go into this space, the deeper you know yourself as this quiet, awake, aware, radiant, loving, and compassionate space, what you will discover is that the majority of your psychological suffering will disappear. I'm not going to say 100%, because of course there's going to be those moments when our best friend dies, or our partner, or our child gets sick. And of course, because we are both fully human and fully divine, there's going to be some psychological suffering associated with the very difficult moments of life, of course. But the difference is, when we step into this spaciousness, when we step into the depth and the radiance that we are, we are also connecting to this great okayness. It's not an okayness that we create. But it's very much similar to when you stand on top of a mountain and you look out at life. And even though we all know that life can be crazy and a wild ride, when you stand there and peer out at life, there's just this sense of a universal okayness, a timeless divinity. It's a sense that all is good. All is good. You know, yesterday I ran into this young lady, and I was at an outdoor gear store where you buy and sell. And she brought in all this new equipment. And I asked her what she was doing. What's she doing? Selling all this gear. Tears in her eyes, that her father just died the other day. So he was a mountaineer, and he died on a climb in California. And I sat there and looked into her eyes, and she cried and I cried. But simultaneously, there was this deep sense of okayness. That life is okay. Life is good. There's a sense that her father was okay and that she would be okay. And together we were so radically okay that two strangers who had just met were able to let go and to grieve together. Many of us think that if we're okay, that means we don't feel. That we don't feel anything negative, the so-called negative. That word negative, actually, doesn't make much sense to me anymore. The further you walk on the path, you begin to realize that life is eternal. It's okay. And someone could ask, well, how could that be okay? Her father just died. She's not okay. It's like when you identify with your ego. And I'll remind us that the ego's primary job is to look for problems. If you're identified with your egoic nature, there will not be a sense that life is okay. There will not be that sense. The job of the ego is to search for problems. Search for problems. I was hanging out today again with some, I think I spoke about these guys last week, a couple weeks ago, with some wounded warriors, former soldiers who are disabled and who've been through great hardship. And we were talking, and they were sharing with me with their outlook on life and how they're always on guard. And when we're at a time of war, ego is a great thing to have. You scan the room, you scan the environment, you look for the person who's about to shoot you. It's a great thing to have when we're at a time of war. You know, they were talking to me about how they, you know, like to carry firearms with them and this and that because there's just this general sense of danger. What I was inviting of them was inviting of them to see, like, guys, look around. We're out in the middle of this vast desert with these on the foothills of a huge mountain range. Life is good. Life is beautiful. No one's coming to get you. No one's coming to get you. No one's here to harm you. But they were stuck in their egoic way of being. Stuck there. And oftentimes when we've been through trauma, we get stuck in this way of being where we see pain, we see suffering, we see danger everywhere. But when we step out of that and just come into this quietness, this silence, which is eternally watching life, when we step into the truth, this Zen-like reality, we see there's nothing really dangerous that's happening 99.9% of the time. There's not much dangerous happening. And so if we are suffering, the invitation is to step into this greater view. To step into this greater view. To step out of ego. And if we can do that one thing, so much of our suffering will begin to empty out of us, will begin to disappear. Not that deeply rooted within us. And so a fun game to play when our ego is attacking someone or arguing someone with someone in our head, fun game to play, it's just to look around the most Zen-like, awake, aware way. Notice, the person's not here. There is no danger. There's nothing I need to argue with. We can ask ourselves, am I safe? In the most primal way, am I safe? Yes. And then we look at, well, what's here now? Oh, it's quiet. spacious. Is there radiant aliveness here? And oh look, there goes that thought. That thought that just wants to argue with someone who's not even present. Can I see that thought and not worry about it? Can I come into this Zen-like reality? Can I feel my feet on the ground? Can I feel the aliveness of my form? Can I feel the beauty and the love of my heart? Can I feel this? Can I experience it directly? Can I know myself as this? Instead of knowing myself as this psychological program, which is eternally looking for problems, can I know myself as this? And so that's what I call step one. And if any of you try to master step one, you might come to a similar conclusion that I came to. I notice that this peace, this spaciousness, this vastness is always here. Always here. That much of my suffering had disappeared. But as time went on, and a deep sense of humility, a deep sense of humility came forward, I could admit, well, there's something within me. There's these places within me. Places which were deeply neurotic, deeply hurting, deeply entrenched, which were not healed simply by the space of awareness. Now, I know many of my colleagues, many people I have studied with and had respect for, I've often said, if you do this, you can be free. All suffering will disappear. You'll see life as an illusion and this and that. Come into the now, and that's all you need to do. But what I found was, as I looked at this question deeper, what is suffering? Why is some suffering persistent? What is the point of suffering? Did God really make a mistake? Did God really create us and create suffering so we could overcome suffering and then go back to a place of nothingness again? That made no sense to me. The all-powerful, all-loving, all-intelligent presence of God made a mistake? No. But that made no sense to me. So I began to ask, what is the role, the point of suffering? If an all-intelligent God made this world, made my ego, made all of my emotions, could I assume that anger not God, said that confusion is not God? When I deeply sat with this, and especially where I live in Colorado, where you can see millions of years of evolution, when you climb mountains and you look out all the layers of rock, when you feel yourself as the hugeness of life, a vast space of eternal life, yet incarnated in a body, in a form, in an evolutionary nature, you begin to see that God made an evolutionary world. And that everything within this world is a stepping stone to something greater. everything within this world is a level, is a stage of consciousness. Everything without exception. Without exception. Anger, sadness, rage, war, violence, greed. Even something as terrible as rape. Everything is a stepping stone. A stepping stone to something greater. It is an aspect of divinity at that level. At that level. Now, I was talking with a young lady yesterday, and she was telling me how she felt tremendous rage. Absolute rage. We began to investigate together, like, what is the point? What is the point of rage? Is that God too? Is rage an aspect of God? Now, of course, rage in and of itself is an aspect of God. For everything is God. But as a spiritually awakened individual, we can look at rage and say, okay, it's bad, I don't like it, it doesn't feel good, and try to transcend it, try to dismiss it. But the title of this talk this evening is Suffering, the Grand Gate of Integrated Awakening. The Grand Gate of Integrated Awakening. So I'm an individual who had tremendous anger. I can imagine or remember sitting with anger for maybe 5 or 10 years on the path. And in a very immature way, I thought I would just dissolve this anger. And it would not dissolve. Now, meanwhile, when I was trying to get rid of it, I also noticed I had no voice. I was stricken with guilt. People would take advantage of me all the time. Now, I can remember I was doing some work for a client. This is back when I used to build things. And there was a couple, they were married, and there was a crew of us, and we were working on their house, and they were multi-millionaires. And I was, you know, certainly not. I certainly was not. And something happened on the job. Something went wrong. It was outside of my control and not necessarily my fault. Something that another contractor did. And the owners of the house just came in and just let go of everyone. It was a few times in my life when I've ever been let go. And they owed me, you know, close to $12,000. And I took a deep breath and I swallowed it. I didn't argue. I didn't have any voice. I just swallowed it. And I sat with that experience for many years, thinking that life was unfair, that I was a victim. And yet simultaneously, I knew in my heart that God loved me deeply. God loved me greatly. And my teacher used to ask me, he said, Craig, figure out how this too is God. How this too is God. What was God trying to show me? What was God trying to teach me? So I sat with this anger in a different way. I felt the hugeness of the anger. Instead of trying to transcend it and get rid of it, I actually loved the anger. And what I realized is the more and more that I loved this anger, It didn't dissolve, it intensified. But as it intensified, it turned into this wonderful quality. This quality of power. This quality of strength. This quality of voice and action. I began to realize that all this anger within me was not really anger. It was a doorway to experience power. And so instead of feeling like a victim, instead of feeling like that somebody just screwed me and life is unfair, what I realized was that there was this beautifully orchestrated event that came forward within my life. And my God, was it painful. It was so painful. I couldn't avoid it. I couldn't deny it. I couldn't simply transcend it and just say, oh, this too is God, and take a deep breath and let it go. It would not let go within me. It wasn't supposed to let go. The invitation was to open into that anger and to begin to discover how big I am. And it wasn't the I am of Craig the ego. It was how big I am is. How big God is. How big truth is. Most spiritual people that I work with, they're terrified of anger because someone was mean, violent, or abusive with them. But if you want to live in a fearlessly open-hearted way, as Christ lived, Christ wasn't afraid of anger. He opened to his anger. He experienced it fully. He was not afraid of it. And he was able to bring forth something incredible in this world. Just imagine what a leader Christ would have been if he kept his mouth shut, if he didn't speak up. There wouldn't be such a thing as Christianity. There wouldn't be such a thing as the teachings of Jesus. There wouldn't be such a thing as the teachings on forgiveness. To learn how to truly forgive, you must become powerful. One of the doorways to forgiveness is being absolutely comfortable with your anger, experiencing it fully, allowing it fully. And as you digest it fully, what you begin to discover is anger is not digested into poison. It is transformed, transmuted into power, into this absolute strength. An absolute strength. Not the type of strength that will lash out, but rather the type of strength that will remain open-hearted when someone has wronged you. Or as the prayer says, as when someone has trespassed against you. Can you still be open-hearted and loving when someone has done something terrible to you? The only way that will be possible is if you will have already embraced your anger, embraced your sadness, embraced your grief fully and completely. When you walk through this doorway, what many people say is, oh, when I walk down that road, I find more anger. It intensifies. And so, therefore, I must back away. But if you look at this from an evolutionary enlightenment perspective, see that God doesn't make mistakes. What is anger? its confused or lesser form of power. And of course, as the Buddha taught, there's skillful ways we can express anger and unskillful ways. Now, most of the planet, if you look on the news, you can see people expressing anger in a very unskillful way. Through wars, violence. But when an individual embraces their anger fully, you get an individual like Christ, or Martin Luther King, or Gandhi, Vivekananda, an individual who's not afraid to speak his truth, to live his truth. She's not afraid to live in her absolute autonomy. Absolute autonomy. We will never know the full awakened state unless we are completely and totally friends with anger, sadness, rage, heartache. Because there is an absolute truth in every one of these. Not the truth that life is suffering and God made a mistake. But yes, that life is suffering if we identify with it, with anger at the level of ego. But if you identify with anger from an open heart, you quickly discover an immeasurable power and the death of the victim, which is basically egoic consciousness. Fear is another wonderful experience that I like to work with. If most people feel into fear, they immediately begin to feel anxious. They start to have panic attacks. Their thoughts just run into these crazy cycles and crazy stories. The things that probably will not ever happen. But one of the things that happened is I was sitting with anxiety, as I was sitting with fear, as I felt into the fear at an energetic level, and this, wow, there's a lot of energy here. Tremendous amount of energy. As I felt the nature of this energy, you know, at first it felt like a screaming terror in every direction. I began to investigate, well, how is this to God? How is this to God? And as I began to feel into it more and more, not through the lens of ego, not through ego, but through my heart, I began to experience this absolute radiance in every direction. And a radiance where the ground is simultaneously falling out from under me, from all of life. And for most people, that would be terrifying. But for someone like me, who's kind of crazy, the kind of person who likes to climb mountains and jump off cliffs, I say, well, what is the feeling of the ground falling out from under me? And my ego is interpreting it as terror. And I would reach down, just like the Buddha, into the ground and say, oh, the ground is still here. It's not falling out from under me. There's the feeling of it. But then I heard this old phrase that the Buddha said, the groundless ground. And I began to smile. with the feeling of free falling through space. Oh, this is the groundless ground. Oh, this is the teaching on everything is impermanent. And then instead of having this thought, everything is impermanent, and going into some place of feeling sad or depressed or nihilistic, there arose this experience of tremendous excitement. Incredible excitement, incredible enthusiasm, incredible freedom. And this will happen to me often. I'll have to reach down and touch the ground just to make sure it's there. Because within my experience of totally opening to this, at first it can be very frightening, very terrifying, very disorienting. For a while I was even having intense vertigo because the ground was falling out from under me, the sky was expanding in every direction. It just felt like my consciousness was exploding, very much like outer space is exploding. They say the universe is growing at an exponential rate. We are one with life, we are one with the universe. That experience is us too. It's us too. And so oftentimes, the very emotional quality, when we open to it, we begin to discover something similar, but opposite. Fear becomes excitement, tremendous excitement. Absolute excitement. And so what a wonderful thing to discover your nature as exploding in every direction. What you'll find is when you begin to open to fear, You begin to discover a fearlessness towards life. That fear falls out of you. Literally, it falls out of you. And what you're left with is tremendous strength, tremendous confidence, tremendous excitement and enthusiasm toward life. Again, with anger, you open into power. When I was sitting with anger, I can remember just this energy. It felt like a volcano was just pouring its way, exploding its way up my spine through all the chakra centers, pouring out my fingertips, out my palms, out my bottom, out my feet. I never felt myself so huge and powerful. If you ever stand before a statue of Kali, you'll notice she possesses incredible power, incredible fearlessness. She is not a spiritual wet noodle. She's not afraid of intensity. Now, I want to be crystal clear here. Oftentimes, our ego can get a hold of this teaching. I think it means, you know, if we're angry at our wife or our husband, well, we just go and let him have it. This is absolutely not what I'm saying. I'm saying very much the opposite. You open and connect with your heart, and you go where your heart guides you. At one point in my life, I found that one of my great friends have been stealing lots and lots of money from me. Tremendous amount of money. And here he was, a good friend of mine, I mean, one of my best friends. And so my first reaction, of course, was to be angry and simultaneously to be hurt. But as I confronted him about it from a place of peace, I was able to be open and continue to love him while simultaneously setting a boundary, while simultaneously feeling at one with him and absolutely understanding the pain he felt and the confusion he felt, the suffering that he was experiencing. I was able to fully understand why he did this, how it came about. And so if you look at Christ, Christ was able to love, to forgive, to let go the individuals who hurt him. He was able to do this not because he was living in the transcendent, but because his heart was fully open. He acknowledged his pain. He allowed it fully. He was absolutely comfortable with it. He wasn't afraid of his pain. He wasn't afraid of suffering. He walked through the doorway of suffering and discovered eternal life. And I want to be clear here. I'm not speaking about eternal life in heaven. I'm speaking about eternal life right here, right now. Stepping into eternity. Stepping into a heart which can no longer become a victim. Which can no longer be truly hurt. Now, of course, your human heart can always be hurt. Your human ego, your human body can be hurt, can be deformed, can be broken. Of course, that's an experience of being human. But the more and more you step into this greater sense of divinity through the doorway of your humanity, you truly discover a divinity that cannot be harmed, which is unshakable. And then they often refer to this as the mountain of emptiness. You become a mountain. If you feel into a mountain, it's powerful. It's massive. It's wise. It's total. It's complete. It's unmoved. If enlightenment is synonymous with unmovability, and you must become comfortable with all of your feelings. Everything is within, that is within us. You must become absolutely comfortable with it. Many of you are mothers. And to birth a child, you have to become absolutely comfortable. Despite the pain, despite the fight going on in your body, there's this sense of letting go into the hugeness of the birth process. Letting go into the hugeness of it, despite how it feels. As you let go, as you surrender into the hugeness of life itself, something radically beautiful comes forward. And as many women say, I don't want to do that again. But they are forever changed. You can see it in a mother. They have this tremendous strength about them, knowing they outlived something so incredibly painful, something so incredibly difficult. There's a strength and a wisdom and an autonomy about a mother that she didn't have before. And so again, when we look at suffering, when we look at evolution, you see the two are absolutely linked. That word suffering doesn't make sense anymore. You just start to think of it as evolution. Everything is evolution. Everything is a doorway into something great. Everything. And I can say this as an individual who's lived with chronic pain, who's been through divorce, who lost everything he owned, who's had good friends, parents die. I can attest that everything is going our way to something greater. I've sat with individuals who are ritualistically abused and tortured. And I sat with them. We're meeting each week for 3 years or 4 years or 5 years. And I was deeply humbled when those individuals could admit to me that this too was God. And it helped them to discover a depth of love, a depth of forgiveness that they had no idea was possible. What they showed me was tremendous forgiveness. And to those individuals, I bow before them. They showed me the strength of the human heart, strength of the divine heart. It makes absolutely no sense to our egoic mind what I've spoken about for the last hour. So I want to be crystal clear here. If you're struggling with this, if there's something you cannot let go, if you're listening and thinking that this guy Craig is absolutely crazy, I will agree with you. I am. This teaching is crazy. But if you look at any great teacher, any great individual, they are living outside of the box, outside of the norm. Enlightenment is a radically different view, a radically different perspective. It is not a perspective based in ego. It's a perspective based in unconditional love. Unconditional love. Unconditional strength. Unconditional impermanence and groundlessness. Unconditional evolution. You see, evolution is not a mistake. Are there casualties? Absolutely. Is it painful? Absolutely. Does our ego just wish and desire that it could be different? Absolutely. I can remember screaming at God, saying, what the hell kind of world did you create? This is ridiculous. Cursing the Lord's name. Screaming at the top of my lungs to God, what the excuse my language, but what were you thinking? In utter agony. But when we truly open to that suffering, when we truly open and love everything that is within us, when we truly love everyone and everything, when we truly ask, how is this God? How is this evolution? we begin to open. To a world of victim consciousness, opposite of egoic consciousness. Victimless consciousness. And simultaneously, we can admit in the most human way, because our heart is open. Our heart is so open, even to our own human perspective. We can admit, we can cry, we can grieve, we can understand, we can be compassionate with ourselves, with another. We can grieve, we can understand anger. We can admit it makes no sense. And boy, do we wish life was different. But it's not. This is an evolutionary world. And so we hold both perspectives. Yes, it's absolutely brutal. And yes, it is beautiful in a human way. And yes, it is absolutely okay. Absolutely perfect. Absolutely divine. That nirvana and samsara one are absolutely one. So again, thank you so much for having me this evening. I thank you, Regina, for inviting me to continue to teach, and thank you all for showing up. I feel so touched by your presence. I feel your hearts absolutely connected with mine. And so I encourage you all to sit with this question. All these questions. What is suffering? What is the purpose of it? What is my next step? If you cannot find this, you cannot find the truth within yourself, call upon God, call upon your heart, call upon that which is higher within you to show you, what is this about? What is my metta? How can I let go? How can I forgive? How can I be open? How can I step into this fearlessness? And so again, I'll stop myself from talking anymore. But again, thank you all so much. I feel so honored and so blessed. May God bless you all. May God bless this entire world. Peace be with you.